very disillusioned and on lack of sleep is getting me into the moment where all I can think about is how, I mean, what's it like to, like, you know, I used to always wonder, like, what it's like to be like a celebrity who like came from nothing and then you end up marrying someone super famous. I used to think that. Now I wonder what it's like to be Jerry Seinfeld, knowing that he left his mark on a generation by creating the B movie.
Yeah.
I mean,
screw creating like one of the most popular sitcoms of all time. B movie.
Well, I don't like Seinfeld. Sorry. Okay. I know people hate me when I say that, but like, and this is going to make me sound weird, and this is not a bit. I genuinely mean this from the bottom of my heart and my soul, but I'm a texture person. And when I look at the show itself, it doesn't even have to be like the actual plot of the show. But when I look at the show, if I could touch it, it looks like it would be sticky. And because of that alone, I can't do it. I can't. You know, therapy once a week isn't really doing it for me.
So you've been watching the B movie on repeat recently.
You know what? What girl doesn't dream of having her own B movie? You know.
I mean, they made a lot of money.
Did
somehow?
They? I don't think they did. I don't think they did. I think they lost.
They made a lot of money. They didn't make a profit, but they made a lot of money.
They made dreams. Yeah, and a meme. And dreams are memes. Anyways, what are we doing? Let's talk. Let's do this.
Yeah. So we played on a stream together the other day.
Yeah, I know that's a rare happening for both of us.
It was your stream. You asked me to be there.
I know that was a joke. It didn't land. But yes, I did ask. I did ask you to play on stream with me, and we had a good old jolly time. But you and I both noticed. There were some happenings.
Yeah, some very interesting things.
Yes.
We both, I don't know, I'm not going to speak for you.
Yeah.
But I popped off and I felt bad about it to the point where it's like, why am I even doing this?
Yeah. No, I did that too. I literally felt the exact same way. And the thing is I prefaced the game with me being like, grab this deck because every time I play it I feel like a huge jerk, but I played it and boy howdy did I feel like a huge jerk, much like Jerry Seinfeld in her episode of Seinfeld.
But like at the same time, you felt like a jerk for popping off, and then I felt like a jerk for completely shutting you down with Reins of Power.
Oh no, it needed to happen. Like, for sure it needed to happen, because if you didn't do that, I would have won. So for reference to the people who did not watch that stream, I whipped out one of my decks that I love but I hate, and I love to play it but I hate to play it at the same time. It's my Elminster deck, which is a really interesting deck because it's one of the few decks I have that I feel as though I can play both at a higher and lower power strategy. Because basically I can either exile expensive spells off the top of my library to get a bunch of fairy dragon tokens equal to the exiled card's mana value, or I could instead scry a lot, reduce the cost of an instant or sorcery, and then cast a really big explosive spell for cheap. And on that particular night, we can do a little up on the screen. Sorry to give you that extra work, UK. Of my board state, I took a picture of it and I posted it to Twitter of how disgusting it was. I was able to get two Elminsters. I was able to get 35 Pegasi with Stormherd, 5 Fairy Dragons. I had 2 activations of each Elminster on each turn. I was going to win on my next turn if you had not played that Reins of Power.
Yeah. And for those of you who don't know this random blue card from Commander 2016, it's an instant that says untap all creatures you control and all creatures target opponent controls. You and that opponent each gain control of all creatures the other controls until end of turn. Those creatures gain haste until the end of turn. I had no board. I had no creatures.
Nope.
So I gave Chase nothing and I got 37 1/1 flyers.
Yep. What did it cost me? Everything, literally everything, but it was
literally
beautiful.
Everything, and it cost me 4 mana.
Oh yeah, But like, here's the deal. You had to do that because if you had passed the turn to me, I would have plopped down an Elishnorn and I would have won 1,000%. Because to the folks being like, well, Chase, how did you get so scary? Spark double and expropriate for a whopping 2 mana. 2 mana expropriate feels pretty snazzy, if you ask me. And that was early game too. I want to say that was turn what, 5? Turn 5,
turn
maybe
5,
six?
And you got really good permanence from all of us. We didn't want to give you extra turns. We knew that if you got extra turns, you were winning for sure. So we just had to give our best, like our best permanent.
Yeah, I took Justin's Mana Echoes. I took a land from Bevers, and from you, I took a Whirlwind of Thought to draw me cards.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck? It was so gross. And you.
Like, I knocked you out on turn 5.
Yes, you did. And I sat there for a couple turns, but you know what? I had some time to think about what I did.
Yeah.
Marinated on it a little bit. And I was like, we can reflect on this in an episode.
Think about what you did. Oh, and like the game before that too.
Yes.
I popped off, and I'm the type of player, I don't like taking long turns. I genuinely feel bad about taking long turns.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just certain cards that lend themselves to only ever being a long turn card, like a Bolas Citadel in this particular situation.
Yes.
There's no way to shortcut a Bolas Citadel. You have to go one spell at a time. That's just how the card is played.
Yeah, well, I don't think you typically play shortcutty decks. That's not your play style. You're very intricate with your deck building.
I'm very intent with what I do.
Yes.
And I'm very cognizant of time, which is why I shortcut as much as I do. So if I'm playing a card that can't be shortcutted, you know it's a big deal, and you know I mean what I mean. The thing with Bolas Citadel in particular is like, there is an inherent stopping point. It's when you hit that land that you cannot play on top.
Yes.
You're done.
But you had ways to circumvent that, though.
I circumvented it 4 times during that
turn. Yes, you did. Yes,
I played 12 spells and ramped like a lot. I had a fully fleshed out board state. And it got to the point like I hit the Aetherflux Reservoir too. So my life total wasn't going down. I was gaining life off of every single spell I cast.
Yes, you were.
It never stopped. And the turn just kept getting longer and longer and longer. I was talking with a friend. I had the decision to play some top deck manipulation, like clear the lands off the top of my deck to keep my turn going and like keep building a board state.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could play Ruinous Ultimatum from my hand.
Yes.
And just like get those couple of things, clear out everyone's stuff, and then call it a day and pass the turn. And, you know, maybe that was like a 4-minute turn, 5-minute turn.
Mm-hmm.
But then that begs a question from last week. Like, is it the right thing to play the board wipe? Is it not the right thing to play the board wipe? We were only half an hour into the game at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, that was really early.
Yes.
So a big, heavy reset is probably okay.
I don't know. I find this very fascinating because basically what we're trying to talk about this week is decks that we feel kind of weird playing. We feel kind of hesitant playing things that we have built that are very finely tuned, that are very powerful. And yet when we pick them up, we kind of sort of have like this little tug of like, should I? Is this right? Because you and I are both very strong like supporters of like, build what brings you joy.
Yeah.
Play within the correct context that you're supposed to be playing in. But even then, I still feel this hesitancy and this like pause. And I find myself reaching less and less and less for specific decks. For me, it's my Elminster deck where I feel hesitant about what I'm going to do. And it sucks because it's beautifully built. I mean, it's very seamless. It's very nice. I was a little bit worried it would be bad. But even then I'm like, is this too mean? Even if I play it lower powered, it still feels pretty hefty. I don't know.
There's this argument too, like you can hold back on a deck, but at times if you like purposely hold back on a deck, you are inherently saying this deck does not work as intended. Any stereotypical like aggro deck, if you take your foot off the gas pedal, deck doesn't work at all. So it makes you think, why am I even playing this deck in the first place? You know, there's this like umbrella of questions that you ask yourself when you're playing a deck. And like, if you really, really enjoy it, what do you do about it? Like, what do you, how am I supposed to manage this, like, morality of just playing commander in the first place? Because it's off, you're often presented with difficult questions and difficult decisions to make.
I would thoroughly agree with that. If I'm being completely honest, you don't see this question pop up for other formats.
No,
you certainly don't. Not with like Pioneer or Standard.
Their social contract is that and such. You're playing to win. You're playing for keeps. That's it.
But we do have people in Commander who do play to win. I like to win for one. But like, it's so interesting to me because, you know, you're playing a game. The point of a game in itself, in its definition, is to win. But because we are in this social aspect, we have to take a lot of other things into consideration. And for me, when I was playing at my LGS and I played Elminster, and I was able to do an expropriate. Again, I keep bringing it up, but that's one of the nastier spells in there. But I was able to get expropriate, and like literally my opponents just started having their own conversation amongst themselves while I was doing my shenanigans. And you just have me going, okay, dude, I'm trying to fast track. I'm trying to be like, okay, blah, 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 blah. But it's so intricate that you can't really, really do that because you're scrying a bunch.
You've alienated the table from the game that they're supposed to be meaningfully participating in.
Exactly. That is exactly the situation. And but the deck is doing what it's supposed to do. So, but what do you do? You know, it's so weird.
I feel like there's a few things that you could do. For one, just accept that that's how it's going to be. Like, go off, King. Do your thing. Mm-hmm. Because your perception of something might not be the perception of the other people at the table. Like we've kind of said, there's just some cards. That's just how it is. Expropriate, Bolas Citadel, even simple cards like Yisan or Survival of the Fittest, where it's just constant searching and shuffling and stuff like that, where you cannot shortcut it. You stop, you let that person resolve their thing, and then you keep going. Sometimes the right decision is to just accept that that's how it's going to be. But on the other hand, and this brings up your favorite deck, your Sisse deck, sometimes it's as simple as just figuring out the root of that joy sucker and then cutting that card.
Yeah, like I did with Elspeth. I would agree with that. It made the deck feel samey, and we did have a good conversation about that.
Sometimes that's just all it needs. But at the same time, you don't want to actively hamper yourself, because at a certain point you will actively hamper your own enjoyment. And you might even just ship of Theseus your own deck. You might cut yourself back. You might cut your deck back enough that you don't even recognize the deck anymore. And it's not the deck that you intended to build. You just don't enjoy it.
And that's an issue for me, because when you brought up like the concept of like, well, you know, with Sisse, that's a great example of like how to take a deck and change it in a way where you still have enjoyment and others still have that enjoyment as well. With Elminster in particular, I find that to be near impossible. And the reason why is just because he requires such high costed spells. And I mean, I could in theory eliminate all aspects of instants and sorceries and only do that -3. But then it doesn't really feel like the same deck it is, you know, it feels less impactful. And I mean, even then, there are some nasty cards in there, but there are some cards in there that are also not good. You know, like I run Sigiled Starfish. I mean, I run Brain in a Jar. That's not considered, you know, a super high powered, very good card. But it's fun in the context of Elminster is like, okay, you know, if I'm really hurting, I can scry. And I like it. But like the problematic cards are unfortunately the cards that make it function.
What it is.
So like again, Spark Double, Temporal Trespass, Expropriate, Approach of the Second Sun, Dig Through Time, Draco, Sign of Draco. I mean, like it's just on and on and on and on. And at that point, if I remove those cards, it's definitely not the same deck anymore. And I don't know if I would have as much fun with it, because I know that you're a big green Timmy person, and I know that this deck is Azorius, but this is kind of my way to be a Timmy. It's play Azorius.
Think about it this way. Within the context of those colors, there's no other commander that plays those colors exactly like that.
I don't think so.
You know, when you think blue-white, you think like hard control, stacks, permission, counter spells, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You're playing big, dumb BS in blue-white. Like, you're playing Stormherd, for God's sake.
I'm playing Stormherd. That's the, in my opinion, Stormherd is the commander player's dream. It is the commander player's dream. You have the life total, but it just, it's doable. But in Elminster, it's almost too doable because, again, if you see my board state, I had 35 Pegasi. I had 35 life.
You wording it specifically like that brings up a very interesting, very interesting thought experiment for a lot of decks. You specifically said it's too doable, and my head immediately went to tutors.
Yeah, because I tutored it. I tutored that card with a mystical tutor. Yeah, I got that easy.
A lot of people who might feel bad about the things that they're doing in a game, ask yourself, is it because you tutored for that thing that you feel bad about?
Yes, I did.
And just an interesting thing that crossed my head. I don't think it's wrong.
Oh, no. Well,
but I don't think it's right to think that that's a problem either. You put those cards in your deck for a reason.
Yes. You know, the deck does not have a mind of its own. The deck does not control me. You know, for sure. Like, I put those pieces in there for sure. I'm not saying, woe is me. This deck fell into my lap like the death
this,
note.
This deck now never I'm being does this.
To Willem Dafoe, you know?
Yeah.
But it's this, I don't know. It's weird to feel guilty about doing well.
I think that's the social contract in action. Unfortunately, we've been conditioned as we've been brought up in this format that the enjoyment of the group is at times more important than your enjoyment. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you are a part of that group. Your enjoyment still matters. Mm-hmm. It's just, how do you find the ability to strike a balance between your enjoyment and the enjoyment of the people that you're playing with?
I am really glad you said that. I'm really glad you said that because you and I are both very strong supporters of social contract and Rule Zero, like heavily.
Literally, I went to school studying that kind of thing. Yeah.
But I think that not too often do we kind of tackle the other end of it, you know, I think mm-hmm. you worded that in a very good way. You know, because I've had moments where I've posted about, like, you know, Rule Zero social contract, talk about the cards in your deck on Twitter. And, you know, everyone will respond either positively or negatively. But I've seen a couple of responses that have popped up. And I think that kind of ties into it, where I've seen a lot of people say, well, what do you want me to do? Play with my food? And I've seen people like actually like respond to that. And I find that very interesting because you want to win, you want to do well, but you don't, at the same time, you don't want to prolong things in a way that makes people feel like, you know, they were handed something. I don't know. I don't know how to explain this very well. That's kind of where
I know what you're getting at. Cause like you don't want to make someone sit through, you know, a combo or like a big pop off turn, but at the same time, you don't want it so tight and so compact that it's so efficient that people didn't really feel like the game lasted for very long one way or another. Yeah. You know, it's one thing drawing into an expropriate and then going off like that. It's another thing to go out of your way to tutor for it, set it up with the scry, cast it for 2 mana, and so on and so on and so on. Like an expropriate for 9 mana, I think that's completely reasonable.
Oh, yes.
It's still an incredible spell. I'd say when someone is spending like 9 mana, 10 mana on something, and it doesn't win them the game, people at the table might kind of feel a certain way.
Kind of like with like Cyclonic Rift. I mean, Cyclonic Rift is 7 mana. I know a lot of people feel bad.
Yeah. If you cast a Cyclonic Rift overloaded and don't have anything to do after the fact outside of, haha, I'm the only one with a board. It's not like that was the objectively wrong play to make. Like overloading a Cyclonic Rift and putting yourself firmly ahead in the lead, whatever you want, is like a very good thing to do. I highly recommend it. But at the same time, if it's just going to keep the game going for like another hour, do you really want to do that? And that's kind of what Chase is getting at with like your deck doesn't control you. You are the one piloting the deck and making the decisions. You're the one choosing to overload the Cyclonic Rift. You're the one choosing to play a bunch of ramp spells to clear off the lands from the top of your Bolas Citadel instead of casting the Ruinous Ultimatum that you've been sandbagging in your hand for 4 turns straight.
There have been moments where like I've had like a soul ring in my hand, like turn one soul ring into like signet. But there have been games where I've held back and I haven't done that. Maybe I'll do soul ring turn two or turn three. Is that objectively like the bad play? Obviously, you want to have like four mana on turn two, seems pretty good. But like depending on the pot I'm playing in, I feel like that, you know, is not the vibe.
Because we are in a very data-driven era of Commander these days. Mm-hmm. There is actually data out there that says playing a turn one soul ring actively makes your chance to win the game lower.
Really? I heard it was higher, actually.
Depends. A CEDH, higher. Very casual sort of stuff. Like talking to Andy and Coyle and the Guardian Project guys, most every time that they've played like a turn one soul ring, their win percentage goes down because they're perceived as the threat. At a casual table where there's less fast mana and soul ring is essentially a power card and like one of the best cards in your deck, the faster you get it out, the faster you're perceived as a threat at the table.
Oh, it makes tons of sense, but I don't know why in my mind I remember seeing data. I think someone said like you're like 20% more likely to win, I saw, but I mean it would make sense for you to get targeted, of course.
I think you could probably break it down like you are either like your chance to win the game goes up, but your chance to get eliminated first also goes up a proportionate amount.
High risk, high reward for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for a lot of us, like we love that high risk, high reward feeling of playing Magic. We're playing Commander for the crazy memorable moments. So obviously we're going to play to those sorts of outs and play to those sorts of lines.
I also want to mention that we have, you and I in particular, and you know, a handful of people who listen might as well. We have different experiences and perspectives with this because we are creators. We are literally, you know, making content to entertain.
Yeah, we're not there for ourselves. We're there to entertain other people.
Yeah, and so when I grab Elminster, in my mind, in the moment, when I'm on stream, when I was making those plays, I wasn't thinking about, and this isn't, you know, a full moment of honesty here, and it might make me sound like a horrible person, but in that moment, I wasn't thinking, oh, are my opponents having a good time? I was thinking, just gonna go crazy, casting this, like, super cheap spell and taking an extra turn and then getting infinite colorless mana with, like, 35 Pegasi from a Mana Echoes. Like that was exciting and entertaining to watch, but was it fun to play against? I don't know.
I had fun playing against it because I watched you do this the whole time and was like, Chase is gonna be miserable in about 5 minutes because I have the silver bullet for this. And that's what like that's why the whole time that you were doing everything, I was reassuring Justin and Mr. P, like, don't worry, I got this.
I got this. Yeah.
Let Chase do this. Play your turn as normal. This is not going to affect you. I pinky promise. And then I drop Reins of Power and ruined your day.
I mean, but here's the deal, though. If I'm going to lose, I want to lose in a cool and ridiculous and stupid way. And that's also the entertainer in me. I love it. Yeah.
In my eyes, if you're going big, I want to lose even bigger.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Like, when you cast Reins of Power, there was a 2-second moment where I was like, oh, I hate you. And then there was like rest of the time I was like, this is going to be really good. Because like you can actually see the realization happen live when you cast it. And I went, oh, well, you're just going to exchange control. They don't have haste. I'm fine. And then you were like, Chase, literally read the next line of the card.
The only sentence on the card that you didn't read.
I was like, oh, geez, I don't read. That's my one weakness. So I was like, oh,
reading the card explains the card.
Yeah, and I don't read. You know, it just makes it very difficult. I can't count either.
What's the meme from King of the Hill? This would be so great if I could. No, no, sorry. It's Arthur. The DW reading the do not enter
the
sign on the door.
Yeah, the
sign. Like, that sign doesn't matter because I can't read.
I thought you were talking about that Vine where he goes, what up? I'm Kyle. I'm 19. And I never learned how to read. We also have to take into account, you know, like because we are creators and entertainers, I think that those losses impact us less than if we were at an F&M or even if we were playing playing at a friend's house, it might be a little bit less. But like if you're playing with random strangers at an F&M, I don't think they're going to take it as jovially as I did.
Depends on who you're playing. Like if you're playing with new people, it could either go really great or really poorly. If you're playing like with your beer buddies, you know, just like regular Commander night.
Yeah, chill.
It's only going to end well because, well, you guys have a crazy story to razz each other about for the next little while. Like, hey, remember when I got you real bad? There's something to be said, you know, being cordial, you know, if someone stops you, like, and it ties into the episode last week about removal. Like, if you're going off and someone stops you, they got you. Bask in the fact that you were stopped. Like, be graceful in the fact that you were stopped and shut down.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because the next time you're going off and they don't have it, you'll feel all that much more satisfied. Like, hey, like, I got this through on you this time.
Yes.
There's also something to be said, I think, that we haven't brought up. You know, if you go off big the one time, you know, maybe next time let your buddy go off. If you made them sit through a 25-minute expropriate turn or a 25-minute bullet citadel turn, you know, maybe it's their turn to do that same thing the next time. They were awesome enough to sit through you doing that turn. In poker, there's this idea you have to give action to get action. In the context of Commander, like, you have to let someone else take a 25-minute bullet citadel turn so that you can get a 25-minute bullet citadel turn down the line. It's a give and take relationship within the social contract.
I am a big supporter of, if you like pop off like hardcore with a deck, like me with my Elminster, you with your Lich deck, if you pop off, you win that game. I like to take the deck. I retire it for the rest of the time I'm with that pod. I'll probably take something else and pop it out with me, just because with that social contract, like, you know, I want to maintain a healthy level of like enjoyment amongst my friends and I. And, you know, like, I maybe you do it once, but like, I don't think the vibe at the table is like more. You know, I don't think anyone looks at that and is like, more.
Please, sir, may I have another?
Yeah, may I have another 25-minute turn?
You brought up my Lich deck, which is very interesting, because like, this is like my hot new deck. I'm still testing it. I don't know what it can do yet. So I think that's a very interesting portion that doesn't necessarily fit completely into this box that we're talking about. Because if it's a new deck, you don't know what it's going to do. You don't know where to inherently stop. Because if you're testing it, you want to see how far it can go.
Yeah, you want to test those limits and really put it through the ringer. And I mean, like, if you, because like, here's the deal. In the game that we played, you might have had that insane turn going on with all those cards, but I guarantee you, you might not have that exact same experience if you play with another pod one night later, even an hour later.
Here's the thing. I played that same deck two nights before.
Yeah.
Same thing happened. Bolas Citadel put a whole bunch of stuff into play. But that time, I actually won because I did hit the extra turn spell with the Lich in play, so I didn't lose the game. I was able to keep going and going and going and going. Everything was just lining up.
And, I mean, we had a chat afterwards about... hold on, I'm going to actually go through the text, because I think you actually sent me a text. I want to pull it up, the verbatim, because it really made me laugh.
It made me laugh writing it. I know what you're talking about.
Because you... I'm finding this text. I want to find the specific. Here it is. Yesterday, 8:34 p.m. Yeah, I definitely got to remove Citadel from Lich.
And I believe by 9:15, you convinced me to keep it in.
Maybe. I don't know. All I know is that you sent me this picture of Jim.
You mean my new favorite meme?
Yeah, your new favorite meme. All I did was went... Yeah, it's really good. And then you went, me. Sent a picture of Jim laughing evilly. I feel bad for my own monster turn, Elminster. You went, lol, no, I was watching it the whole time like this. And then you responded back with,
yeah. This picture of Jim literally, like, it sums up the feeling of doing the thing and, like, popping off. And in the moment, you're not necessarily thinking about your opponents. All you're thinking about is yourself and like seeing how far you can push the limits of your deck, seeing how far you can push the limits of the 99 that you've assembled and shuffled up for the game. When you're deep in the tank thinking about all of these different moves, rightfully so, you're probably not thinking about, oh, like, what are my opponents going to think about? Because hindsight is 2020. being in the moment, you're completely tunnel visioned.
Oh yeah, like I said,
it begs the question, like, what are things that we can do to make sure that we don't get tunnel visioned? Does it boil down to doing the homework before the game, or does it boil down to thinking ahead and like vibe checking the table like every turn? Like every turn during your untap step, vibe checking the table.
So I want to emphasize this specifically with Elminster. We both had the conversation, well, all four of us in my pod had the conversation of like, you know, like let's make it a little faster. We literally did have that conversation of like, let's go a little bit faster. Faster usually means a little bit higher powered. You know, Chase needed Din Din. So did Justin.
So did I.
So did you. You know, Mr. B was just there. I love
you. We love him though.
Yeah. And you know, in my head, I'm like, this is a good deck for it. We want to go fast. But at the same time, it felt a little too fast. But we had that rule zero conversation. Yeah. We did. And I also do want to emphasize, I don't think it's reasonable to vibe check every single turn. But there are moments that we've done on like on stream, off stream, even at LGSs, where we literally just kind of take, we untap a keep draw, we look at our hand, we look at the board, and we go, so what's the vibe here? Like literally we've had moments where like, okay, who's the problem here? What's the threat here? You know, do you want to end this? Like, I mean, like having like, I mean, like that's a, in my opinion, that's a viable strategy, is being like, mm-hmm. you know, like, what are we going to do here? Openly saying that to the table. I don't think doing that every turn, but I think having that vibe check, I think is really important, because you could be that at that table for another 2 hours or 10 minutes.
Yeah. When we play with Olivia, we have this saying, is it getting late?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if I say, you know, we're playing in the evening, it's dinner time for Olivia after the stream. There's also this whole idea, like, we don't, like Chase said, you don't want the game to go for very long. So all we say is it getting late? And that is universal for, can I pop off?
Yeah.
And like, try and execute a win condition. Or it's universal for, can I drop a Havoc Festival? And for better or worse, this game is moving. But I think there's a difference between the two. But at the same time, they warrant the same question.
No, they definitely do. Because there are moments where I played a game on, I don't think it was on my stream, it was someone else's stream, where I had victory on table. But my opponent, it was only me and one other opponent. My other two opponents got knocked out. But one of my opponents, she had a board wipe in her hand. And she could have board wiped. But if she did board wipe, we would have been at that stream for another good hour and a half, maybe two. Because she didn't have a way to win on board, but I did. And she was like, yeah, I have a wipe, but like it's late. And I was like, that's super fair. And so the victory was given to me, but it wasn't like, oh, Chase wins technicality. It was like, I respect your time enough to understand that we will be here for literally hours if we continue this.
And so like, if you were playing modern, you snap off that board wipe every single time.
Oh,
like you slam dunk that Supreme Verdict onto the stack without a hesitation. It boils down to exercising the social contract. This isn't rule zero. This isn't anything like that. This is the inherent social contract that you metaphorically mm-hmm. sign when you sit down to play Commander.
Mm-hmm.
It's not set in stone. It's constantly changing. No two vibes at a table are gonna be the same.
Oh, 1,000%.
Learning how to read the table will, you know, it'll make you feel less bad about popping off. It'll make you feel less bad watching someone else pop off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many shades of gray to it that
mm-hmm.
there is no right answer, but there is no wrong answer either. Because if there is a wrong answer, you learned something. Therefore, mm-hmm. it is kind of a right answer.
I mean, I also want to emphasize, like, you know, when you play with people, whether it be friends or new people, you know, like, it's, well, I guess I should say, especially with new people, when you play with new people, you play against a deck, maybe you have a miserable time, maybe they go take 20-minute turns, maybe they pop off, maybe they play a little stacks that you didn't expect, and you know, I wouldn't call that a total loss, because you've gained information. You've learned something new. So when you mm-hmm. play with that person again, you're like, hey, I really didn't have that good of a time playing against like Lavinia. Could we maybe instead play against your Rin and Sari deck? And they're like, yeah, totally. Or if they go, no, cool. You don't have to play with them, and you can instead kind of have a different experience with somebody else, because it's, you're still gaining information and understanding someone else's play style. Because, you know, again, like, maybe there are pods where my Elminster is going to be welcome with open arms, and they're going to want to experience those turns, take, you know, incredible twists and cheap spells, and suddenly my board state's full of tokens. But there are other pods where it might not exactly be the right fit, and that's where it kind of comes into, you know, you have to kind of check with the pod, understand it, learn, get the vibe check. Because, like, I don't think I want to take Elminster apart. And at first I thought I wanted to.
I don't want to take Lich apart, but I want to figure out the right way to tune it to minimize me feeling bad, or to be more cognizant of my opponent, so that I'm doing that homework beforehand. So when I am in the moment, when I am in the tank, and, you know, that little bit of my brain that would normally be spent, you know, vibe checking the table, or, you know, being cognizant of my opponent's experience, that's kind of gone out the window, and I'm focusing on my own game. Well, I've made sure beforehand, whether that's through the rule, you know, the pregame discussion, the social, you know, talking about the social contract for the game, or the deck building itself, that worry has been minimized before I actually get there.
Yeah. And I don't know if I can do that quite with Elminster. I feel like I might have to put him in the same camp as Gitrog, which I don't really want to do, because I don't think they're at the same power level whatsoever.
No, you cannot play those two decks at the same table.
No, in my opinion. I don't think I can either, but at the same time, I don't think I could, like, just sit down with Elminster unless I choose to play him strictly as tokens, which is, I mean, I can. Tokens and alt win con.
But at the same time, you're exiling all of the good spells that would make those tokens actually worthwhile.
Exactly.
And do things.
Yes, because I have a Scion of Draco in that deck, and you're like, Chase, why are you running Scion of Draco? Well, not only for the mana value, but also, like, the tokens that Elminster make are dragons. So they get keywords based off of Scion, which is so good.
What good are just making a bunch of tokens on, like, you know, a kind of spicier casual game? If your win condition is, and I quote, literally just hoping you untap with them.
Yeah, I feel like it takes a little bit of the fun out of it. But at the same time, I feel like opponents might not have fun with, like, 12 tokens with an Elish Norn, you know?
If you're able to reproduce that board state, like, almost every game, if you want to, and Elminster is incredibly consistent, because it's all about manipulating what draws you're actually going to see and what cards you actually see, you're able to consistently formulate a game plan. You know?
Yes.
Lich is the same thing. It just accidentally puts its entire deck in its hand out of nowhere. So you get to see every single card in your deck, like, every single game. You play a very consistent late game. Just like Elminster very consistently sees the expropriate, sees the time stretch, sees the temporal manipulation, sees the temporal trespass, all that kind of stuff.
I'm truly fascinated with your Lich build, because it toys with something that I feel like I'm too hesitant to toy with, which is just literally the fundamental core values of the game. You also interact with the stack on some level that I think I find very fascinating. Like, what's the card? If you would lose the game instead, you get put at one life. You played it last night.
Stunning Reversal.
There it is, Stunning Reversal. Like, I used to do that with Phage, but, like, that's different. That is very different than what you're doing, and I love it. I just think it's
so fascinating. For those of you who don't know what Stunning Reversal is, it's 3 and a black. It says, the next time you would lose the game, instead, set your life total to 1 and draw 7 cards. Exile Stunning Reversal.
Love it.
So, lose the game trigger on the stack, combat damage heading your way, Chandra's Ignition blowing you to kingdom come. No, cast Stunning Reversal in response to it. You stay alive. You draw, like, you get to keep your hand. You just get another 7.
Yeah, it's, you know, the meme where it's the meme where it's like, you know, call an ambulance, but not for me. That's what this card is.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the right way to put this, because cards like that inherently make those, like, those big pop-off turns that your opponents are taking, though, you know, those 20-25 minute turns, you can kind of sit there, you look at your hand, and you're like, none of this matters. I have mm-hmm. it. I have something that says, I don't care how far ahead you get. I don't care if you're going for the win
mm-hmm.
because you don't have it. Mm-hmm. Call an ambulance, but not for me.
Yeah.
I might be getting set to one, but you're saying there's a chance.
Can we curse on our own show?
If you want to.
We can bleep it out.
It's our show. We make the rules.
Let's bleep it out. I want to bleep it out. I feel like bleeping it out makes it funnier. But you know, yeah. like that meme of that man in a hospital bed. It's like a Snapchat, and it's a man in a hospital lid, and it's captioned, "I lived."
Oh yeah.
I lived. I just think that's what that deck is. I lived.
What's the way that we describe lich decks? I'm going to die, on purpose.
No, even better. I know what you can call your deck. Not yeah. I lived, I liched.
that's what it is. But the whole deck is designed to just, you're involved, you're paying attention to everything because you could die at any point. Those 25, 30 minute turns that your opponents are taking, you have to pay attention. Because you have to know when to not actually die.
Yeah. Which leads to those reigns of powers mm-hmm. moment, you know? Which is so cool.
So, like, that almost makes me think, like, could we just say, like, run more cards like that in your, like, I don't want to tell people how to build their decks. I don't want to tell people what to do. But, like, should we be running more cards like that in our decks?
Is this you saying run more removal? Because if it is, I'm going to scream. Because we literally just talked about this last week.
That's why I'm like...
Just run more removal.
Just run more cards that say you don't actually lose the game when you're losing the game. It does to remove.
Yeah, Hero's Downfall is an uncommon. You can kill Elminster for 3 mana.
I know that that's the buzzwordy meme. But for our own cognizance and like... attention of the game, I feel like it's compelling to run cards like that if you want to. Like, I think that A, they just lead to incredibly interesting moments, but B, it's kind of the answer to everything we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like wording it run more answers. And I think, like, instead of removal, because there are other ways to do things for sure.
That's but my mantra.
But
I want you to go off. I want you to do your thing.
Yeah.
I'm just going to either piggyback off your thing or I'm going to do it even bigger.
I want to watch the light.
That's a lot more interesting than just casting a Wrath of God, casting a Blasphemous Act, casting a Cyclonic Rift.
I want to watch the light in your eyes die as I destroy you. You know, like, I want to watch... the enjoyment leave your face as you realize what I've just done.
That split second where you were like, you
literally
when I stole your 37 Pegasus and Dragons.
I literally think if we find that clip, I'm not saying we have to do it, but like if you as a viewer go and find that clip and you zoom in on my face, you could see the exact like half second where you see me go, oh no. Because I was like, oh, I'm fine. Oh my god. I was like, oh, I'm fine. I'm great. Because in my head, I'm like, oh, you just is going to steal them. It's okay. Because I'll just kill them with my Elishnorn on my turn. And it's fine. But reading is what? Fundamental. Read your cards. But oh my god.
You can kill them with your Elishnorn. If you get to cast your Elishnorn.
Call an ambulance, but not for me.
That's the title of the episode.
Beautiful. I love it. I love that for us.
Just like I'm going to live, laugh, lightning bolt your face so that
yes.
when you do stunning reversal and are set to one, you die to a lightning bolt.
And you know what? I deserved it. And I think that's a beat we can all dance to.
To tie a bow on it, if they get you, you deserved it. You did this to yourself. To quote Sheldon Nunnery, to quote all this kind of stuff. You're the one who played those cards. You're the one who put yourself in this situation. You get what you deserve.
That, That is not the message I was expecting us to end on. Genuinely, I did not expect. I thought you were going to be, I thought you were going to be like, oh, you know, be more mindful, you know.
I mean, you could do that too. Pod. Yeah, I'm totally advocating
but
for that.
You literally are like looking into the camera like, you deserve this and you're the reason why mom and dad are getting a divorce. Thank you so much for watching Bad at Magic. If you don't know who I am, my name is Chase, also known as Manicurves. I'm a Commander content creator. I stream Paper Commander twice a week and deck building once a week on my Twitch channel at Manicurves. And you can also find me on Twitter at Manicurves. And I also write articles about Commander and deck building for Star City Games.
And I'm Eddie, K Plays Cards on all the things. I work behind the scenes with all of your favorite content creators like Ailey and Olivia and Elder Dragon Hijinks, Shivam and Casual Magic. And as of tomorrow, I have Scrybabies content that's out in the world. I edit behind the scenes for the Scrybabies these days as well. So if you're supporting them, you're supporting me. You can support this show by liking and following and clicking all the things and sending all the notifications our way and blowing up our inbox, because it really does help the show and puts it into the algorithm. Because at the end of the day, we're really just trying to defeat all those evil algorithm overlords. So do your part, makes a huge difference, and we appreciate you, and we'll see you next week.